This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 29th, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 101. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary, headlines from around the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The big deal feature. October 1st is the 70th anniversary of Communist Party rule in China. I caught up with a survivor of the Tiananmen Square massacre to talk about China, Hong Kong, and Xinjiang. There's more turmoil at the legislature. This time, Auditor General Carol Bellringer steps down, just 5 days after I challenged her on her flawed and incomplete report on the legislature spending scandal. We'll have another Justin Trudeau bozo eruption. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to someone making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is Justin Trudeau's promise to plant 2 billion trees across Canada over a decade just a gimmick to enrich others in the Liberal Party? As part of his ongoing attempt to use figurative green face to make voters forget about his literal black face and brown face, Trudeau unveiled this promise on the same day as the climate strike protests and Swede Greta Thunberg's visit to Montreal. For starters, incumbent Liberal candidate Joyce Murray of Vancouver Quadra is in this business by way of her husband Dirk Brinkman. Of course, she'll find a way to appear to shield herself from any conflict of interest if the Liberals get reelected and the program gets running. But it won't be a surprise when Brinkman reforestation gets some extra work from the Trudeau Liberals if they stay in the power. Remember Sheila Copps's free Maple Leaf flags giveaway in the 1990s? That ended in tales of waste and corruption. So too with this program. Liberal politicians wouldn't resist the urge to give away seedlings to constituents, especially closer to the 2023 election. And who knows if they'd all get planted or survive to become full-fledged trees. Think of all the tree planting photo ops, too. Politicians love to shovel dirt in front of cameras. What's not as sexy, but needed even more? Well, a plan and funds to keep the trees we have today. The Liberals are strongest in urban ridings in Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver. In Vancouver especially, real estate booms are fatal to century-old evergreens. The three levels of government aren't doing enough to keep those majestic trees healthy and standing, especially in the face of development. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. Tom Blackwell reports in the National Post, Canadian went to China to debunk reports of anti-Muslim repression, but was shocked by treatment of Uyghurs. Olsi Dejeshi admits now he was hopelessly naive. The Albanian-Canadian historian doubted reports that China systematically repressed its Uyghur Muslim minority, believing the West had concocted the allegations to whip up jihadi fervor against Beijing. So, this August, he joined a stage-managed tour for foreign journalists of Xinjiang province, where the minority group is concentrated. The excursion didn't quite work out as planned. Independent human rights organizations like Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International have extensively documented mass-scale abuses against the Uyghurs. Most attention has focused on the detention of as many as 2 million in camps that Beijing says are designed to counteract extremism and teach vocational skills, but that critics call Orwellian re-education centers. Robert Delaney reports in the South China Morning Post, U.S. revised Hong Kong democracy bill targets Chinese state media over harassment of protesters. The latest version of U.S. legislation aimed at supporting democratic freedoms in Hong Kong targets media outlets affiliated with China's government and seeks to bar crowd control and surveillance equipment to the city, expanding the scope of the proposed law that has ratcheted up tension between Washington and Beijing. A revised Senate version of the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act of 2019, which was approved in that chamber's Foreign Relations Committee on Wednesday, would compel the U.S. State Department to take deliberate targeting and harassment of democracy activists and U.S. diplomatic personnel by media organizations controlled by China into account when reviewing visa applications from those outlets' journalists. Hong Kong newspapers Wen Waipo and Ta Kang Po, both run by the Communist Party of China, are cited especially in the revised bill, which is expected to go to a vote on the Senate floor by mid-October. And Kyoto reports in the Japan Times, Tokyo 2020 organizers reveal that 6,900 tickets were bought with fake IDs. About 6,900 tickets sold in the first phase of a domestic lottery in May were bought with fake IDs. Organizers revealed that some 30,000 of the official IDs required to make a ticket application were created with fake personal information, with 1,200 of those winning the rights to buy tickets for the games, which will take place next July and August. The total value of the tickets was about $1.6 million. The tickets will be canceled, with no refunds offered due to being fraudulently purchased. Organizers believe a specific group orchestrated a plan to create fake IDs in order to secure tickets. They have already consulted with the Metropolitan Police Department. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. James Drew reports in the Olympian, Inslee orders ban on flavored vaping products amid growing health concerns. All flavored vaping products would be banned by the Washington State Board of Health under an executive order that Governor Jay Inslee announced on September 27th. Washington State has had several cases of severe lung illnesses linked to the use of vaping products, with one in Pierce County and two in King County. The State Board of Health is expected to take action at its October 9th meeting. Vaping devices purchased as Juuls, e-cigarettes, e-cigs, vapes, e-hookahs, vape pens, mods, tanks, or electronic nicotine delivery systems can contain nicotine, cannabis, or other substances such as flavoring agents and chemicals. There are 805 lung injury cases across 46 states, and 13 deaths have been confirmed in 10 states, including 2 in Oregon and 2 in California. Jeff Manning and Hilary Baroud report on the Oregonian. Kate Brown off to Doha World Championships pledges $40 million to fund Oregon's turn as host. Governor Kate Brown and four of her closest advisors headed to the World Track and Field Championships in Doha, Qatar, where the governor will participate in ceremonies as the host of the next championships in 2021. Brown has reassured officials of the sport's international governing body that she will find an additional $20 million in state support for the Eugene World Championships. The state has already pledged $20 million, raised by an increase in hotel room taxes and grants from the state's tourism agency. The International Athletic Association's Federation unexpectedly awarded its biggest event to Eugene in 2015. The IAAF has been caught up in an international corruption investigation centering on its former head, Lamine Diack. Diack is charged in France of corruption and money laundering. The U.S. Department of Justice is investigating. Also this week in the Breaker.News, these headlines. Inside the Chinese government's immoral, embarrassing cocktail party for municipal politicians and bureaucrats. Inside the West Point Grey Academy yearbooks, which Justin Trudeau helped produce. Fire destroys garage at site of controversial 2016 Trudeau fundraiser. And as Meng Wanzhou returns to court, images of her seized laptop, phones, and tablet emerge. Read the stories behind those headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Supporters of Hong Kong's pro-democracy movement held a flash mob-style protest at Aberdeen Center in Richmond, BC on September 14th. Upwards of 1,000 people surrounded the atrium of the mall and sang Glory to Hong Kong in Cantonese and English. One of those who joined in was Zhou Fengso, one of the student protest leaders at Tiananmen Square in the spring of 1989. After the Chinese army violently quashed the protest on June 4, 1989, Zhou escaped to his hometown in Xi'an and was later arrested and jailed for a year. He came to the United States in 1995 and is the founder of Humanitarian China, which aims to develop a civil society in China and promote the rule of law, human rights, and freedom of expression. I spoke with Zhou at Aberdeen Center after the Glory to Hong Kong rally.
Our organization was founded and currently run by the participants of Tiananmen protests. So we have deep connections with Hong Kong protesters now through the Hong Kong Alliance for Democracy. So through them, I knew this event. That's why I'm coming today to show my support as a democracy activist for China.
I asked Zhou Fengso about the 30th anniversary of Tiananmen Square and the intersection with the Hong Kong pro-democracy protests, which have gained international attention. But is the world watching enough?
Hong Kong people had fought courageously for the freedom of themselves against the expansion of CCP's totalitarian control. That is threatening the whole world. And I don't think it's appreciated enough by the democratic countries what Hong Kong is doing. And we have won victory. You know, the Hong Kong government has declared a withdrawal of the extradition law. But this is only the surface. The true reason is the true democracy that they deserve or denied by the CCP. That's what they are fighting for. That is the value we should all try to defend. So that's why it's so important for us to show support. And on the other hand, the shadow of CCP is everywhere through globalization and the technology and the digital totalitarianism. So that, I think, itself is a threat to the world. For example, just here we have the Huawei executive being held because this technology company, you know, is basically working as an agent for the Chinese government. That's a good example of how China, everything serves the party and the party only. So there's no other way. We have to confront this regime and fight back. That's why what Hong Kong people is doing is so important to us.
I thought it must warm Zhou's heart that so many people showed up in Richmond at a shopping mall like in Hong Kong, where people gather also in shopping malls to exercise their freedom of speech.
Yeah, it was such a privilege for me to be here. I was in tears the moment I walked in. This reminded me so deeply about what happened on Tiananmen Square 30 years ago. The passion, the love for freedom from people's heart, that's evident here. That's why they will win. They will eventually win. You know, it's their will, their love for freedom, they're willing to sacrifice for it.
Hong Kongers take to the streets every year on July 1st to remember the handover from Britain to China, and they protest for more democracy, as well as to protect the one country, two systems.
The ones who didn't make it out.
As a Tiananmen survivor, I'm very grateful about Hong Kong, what they have done in the last 30 years to keep the truth and the memory alive. What's happening today is a reincarnation of the Tiananmen democratic movement in Hong Kong. The young people today, they grew up going to the Tiananmen candlelight vigil. Here too, in Vancouver, there is a very strong presence about the Hong Kong people commemorating Tiananmen. That's a very important, essential democratic education for the young generation. That's why today there's such a willingness to fight against the CCP. But in mainland China, the Communist Party has completely controlled people's mind. It's 1984, all over again, even beyond the wildest imagination. everything people think, even what they are going to think, you know, are under control, under watch. So that's what the kind of future we are all facing. That's what the kind of future that Hong Kong is fighting against.
I asked Joe, what does this year, 2019, mean for him, 30 years after what he went through, and for those who didn't make it?
To me, as a Tiananmen survivor, what happened in last 11 years since the Olympic game was not a surprise at all. Because 30 years ago, when the communist government used tanks to kill its own people, you know, I have friends whose legs were crushed and he was never allowed to talk about it. Some of the Tiananmen survivors were forced to write false confessions, to lie about the crime, so that the whole memory was completely erased.
11 years ago, Beijing held the 2008 Summer Olympics. China said it was opening up, but now under Xi Jinping, there is less freedom, less hope in Hong Kong and in Xinjiang too.
For such a regime, if the world allow it to survive and prosper, it will be a threat to the world. That's what has been happening in the last 30 years. And that's just manifested itself differently in the last 11 years. But it's on the same track all along. That's why now we must awake and fight back. So what's happening in Hong Kong, in Xinjiang, in Tibet, it's all the same. And even now here, in Vancouver, in Toronto, you know, we are seeing the Chinese people being brainwashed. They are weaponized to such a degree that they would threaten the peaceful protesters. I was beaten 11 years ago by supporters of CCP in San Francisco. We were beaten in front of the US police. And that's the moment that re-emphasized the point that such a regime, you know, we cannot allow it to thrive. We have to fight back, confront it, contain it. Any trade with China now, with the firewall in place, will benefit such a regime, will strengthen the slavery that Chinese people are under now. So we have to change, we have to fight back.
I asked if people should call for the International Olympic Committee to take the 2022 Winter Olympics away from Beijing.
Yes, I don't think they deserve it. If they want to hold the Olympic Games, they have to respect human rights. They have to free the Xinjiang concentration camp prisoners. They have to free the Tiananmen survivors who are in prison. They have to free the political prisoners and the Christian believers. So I think that we have to make that voice clear to be heard.
The United Front Work Department of the Chinese Communist Party is very active here in Vancouver. Have you been
Definitely.
Watching what's
yes.
developing?
Yes, yes. I think for now, what's specific now is that WeChat, this super app, has become a very powerful tool for the communist thugs to organize, even if they are outside of China. It's a very dark private circle. You know, they can organize, they can finance without any regulation. So that is showing itself in the recent conflicts with Hong Kong supporters in Vancouver and in Toronto. For example, you know, these people, these young, rich people who drive very luxury cars, you know, like million-dollar cars, they are parading it to show that, you know, that's what CCP is. It's a sign of corruption, you know, and the exploitation of ordinary Chinese because there's no human rights, no protection of the environment. And but now they are able to show off they're living here. A lot of it because of infiltration from CCP through globalization and through technology.
In Canada this fall, we have a federal election. It's coming on October 21st. I asked Joe, what's his message to Canadians?
Canadians should elect people who represent them, who would defend freedom and democracy of Canada against communist infiltration. For example, yesterday there was a high-level Canadian spy being arrested for becoming a foreign agent. Such kind of threat Canada is on. And in last few years, there are 230 Canadians in China being held, now not able to leave. Most of these are ethnic Chinese, but they are Canadian citizens. There are about 200 of them. We must be aware of this. And the, of course, most people, we should also demand the immediate release of the people arrested in the recent time as a retaliation of holding Meng Wanzhou, the Huawei executive here.
That was Zhou Fengso, a survivor of the Tiananmen Square protest in Beijing in 1989 and founder of Humanitarian China. For more information, go to h-china.org. Bell Ringer is going out with a tinkle, not a gong. With 3 years left in her term, British Columbia Auditor General Carol Bell Ringer tendered her resignation on September 24th, just 5 days after releasing a panned report into expense policies and practices at the Legislative Assembly. The $303,000 a year Bell Ringer came to BC from Manitoba in 2014. When she released her first report on September 19th into the legislative scandal, Bell Ringer admitted she did not conduct a forensic audit and that she found no evidence of fraud. That was a very big surprise to Speaker Darrell Plekis, who blew the whistle on corruption in the offices of the clerk and the sergeant-at-arms. Here is Plekis from a September 20th interview with TheBreaker.news, commenting on Bell Ringer's flawed and incomplete report.
I was under the impression, right from the beginning, that it would be a forensic audit. I had meetings with the auditor and her staff, where I called attention to matters which I thought were criminal and had specific discussions about that. So I had lots of reason to, and some of which is indicated in my first report, I had lots of reason to think that there was untoward activity, unusual. I think that Auditor General has been quoted as saying she found nothing unusual and nothing which would indicate any kind of criminal wrongdoing or any kind of fraud. I just have to say that boggles me. I've seen what I would describe as full-blown fraud with my own two eyes, discussed it with her people, and ultimately turned it over to police. I'm just astounded that there was no wrongdoing found there.
This is what Bell Ringer sounded like on the day she released that report, September 19th, when TheBreaker.news challenged her on a media conference call.
There was an allegation in Speaker Plekis' first report that Gary Lenz and Craig James were not paying customs duties when they went on trips offshore. They were not reporting to Canada Customs what they purchased on the way back. Therefore, they were not paying customs duties. Therefore, they were not bringing back receipts for invoices. That's an allegation that was in black and white that didn't need to have a forensic audit. Did anyone at all look at that allegation and start asking questions about why there were no receipts for certain transactions?
Is that in the original speaker's report?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's actually the allegation the speaker made was that Craig James, in a discussion at Heathrow Airport, if I remember correctly, had told Speaker Plekis that why pay, in a nutshell, why pay customs, do what I do, not report. So Craig James was traveling around the world, buying gifts, buying clothes for personal use, as well as for use in the office of the legislature, and he was not telling Canada Customs what he bought, therefore he was not paying duty. That's something that is against federal law, and I'm rather surprised that your office didn't look at it.
I'll just stop you for a second, and just in terms of, those are all allegations, not proven facts. Is my understanding that was not, in the end, followed up in the McLaughlin report. We did specifically design the work that we did to not do a follow-up of the speaker's report because the McLaughlin report was ongoing at the same time. It doesn't mean to say there aren't items in there that may continue to warrant some follow-up. So I'm not saying that, no, we didn't look at it when we did this particular report.
Well, why didn't you look at it? I mean, this is a serious allegation of non-disclosure, no receipt papering over, related to expenses that you did look at. This doesn't make sense, Ms. Bellringer. Can you square that circle?
Yes. So we did anything that was included in the speaker's report, we left into the context of whatever they were choosing to do with the investigation by Beverly McLaughlin and her team. So that was the first reason why we didn't. We have not gone back to the speaker's report to see if there are additional items when we were doing this work. Having said that, there are a lot of things going on right now, both changes at the assembly, policy changes, meetings, other areas, looking at what we'll do next. It doesn't mean we would not consider doing it, but there's also a police investigation underway, or the RCMP looking at certain matters, as well as the Police Act. I'm not privy to the. I know some things about that, but I do not know what they're looking at or what. Until those reports come out, I don't know if the matters that you're referring to have been covered or not.
Well, if your office is spending a lot of time and money to do reports like this, but you're not doing anything to test details that are easy to find that have been made as allegations, and you're not testing them, why should taxpayers have faith that you are actually looking out for taxpayers' interest?
Well, I'm not going to answer that question.
You should answer the question, Ms. Bellringer. Will you please answer the question?
So, I can go through a long list of things that our office does. I mean, you're saying that because there is one transaction that was included in a report that we're saying may already be being followed up, but we are not privy to knowing that. We're saying we're waiting for that. We're saying there was a report that was done that was specifically tied to that, the report that included that information. Because we haven't done all that suddenly the credibility in my office is in question. I'm sorry, I take exception to that comment.
I don't know why you should take exception to the comment. It's a reasonable question.
Well, I know you don't know why I should take exception, because you're the one that made the comment.
There was an allegation made in the report, Ms. Bellringer, and you didn't follow it up. And now you're saying there was no fraud.
You have been removed from the question and answer queue.
I spoke with Alan Mellon, Chief of Staff to Daryl Plekis, about Bellringer's bombshell announcement.
Well, I think both the Speaker and I were quite... surprised and shocked at the timing of the resignation, and certainly, as you mentioned, Bob, that she does have quite a bit of time left in her term. But I would also say we were just as shocked and surprised when her audit came out that it wasn't, as referenced by the Speaker, a forensic audit that he asked for back in February, that Lamsey asked for back in February. That came out. He was critical with regards to the content of the audit. He was critical with regards to the fact that it wasn't a forensic audit. And then Ms. Bellringer, you know, sort of 5 days later, announces or submits her resignation to the Speaker, citing personal reasons. So to answer your question, I would say, you know, quite surprised, actually, certainly at the timing of it. Some folks in the mainstream media are sort of drawing this line, as they've done so in the past, that somehow this is a direct result of the Speaker or us in the Speaker's office essentially pushing people out. That is just not true. I think we need to be mindful and be respectful of the reason that the Auditor General has given. You know, the Auditor General has been an Auditor General for quite some time, both here and in other provinces, and I don't think criticism or disappointment from an individual or an office is going to essentially make her resign. So I think it's very, very interesting timing, but I think, you know, to draw lines directly to the Speaker, you know, I think is inappropriate at this point.
Lawmakers will begin their search for a new Auditor General after the legislature reopens for the fall session on October 8th.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau. No! Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
I think for any project to go forward, we need public trust. And what Mr. Harper has demonstrated over the past 10 years is not behavior that is worthy of public trust. Any proposal to get our resources to markets, which is something that Canada needs to do, but in the 21st century, it needs to do it in a way that gets public trust, that gets support from Aboriginal communities in partnership with them, and gets the support of scientific communities. That's why we're committing to overhauling the environmental review process so that projects currently in the works and in the future will actually establish the public trust necessary. Make no mistake about it, Canada needs to get its resources to market, but we need to do that in a way that actually respects the long-term interests of Canadians and of our future. Even though governments get to grant permits, ultimately it's only communities that grant permission, and that's what we need going forward. I think for any project to go forward, we need public trust. And what Mr. Harper has demonstrated over the past 10 years is not behavior that is worthy of public trust. Even though governments get to grant permits, ultimately it's only communities that grant permission, and that's what we need going forward.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Port Coquitlam Mayor Brad West, who led a protest at the Union of BC Municipalities Convention on September 25th against the Chinese government's lobbying effort. West called the Chinese consulate's $6,000 sponsorship deal and cocktail party for politicians and bureaucrats immoral and embarrassing. As you heard here last week, West is against foreign lobbying, especially when it involves a country with such a poor human rights record as China. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 29th, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me for Edition 101. Did you know that on September 29th in 1923, the first American track and field championships for women were in Newark, New Jersey? There were 11 events, including the softball throw and the basketball throw. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. PATREON.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week.